We'll talk about our friend Jeanette when it starts recording. Hi, Beth.
Hi.
So welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Hello, Miss Catherine. How are you?
You're
on your iPad. It's so nice of us to tell you which device you're using, see?
Well, that's special.
Isn't that?
I can see.
Yeah, it's good. We're all good.
Yes, it is.
Back at Mirabal, Mirabal's pretty slow right now, so it's like, well, okay, we'll see where it goes. Like six clients a week or something like that. So it's 6-7, starting off slowly, building up.
How was Sedona?
It was very nice. Sedona was lovely, actually. You know, we did our social distancing thing. A small group of 7 of us did like a little mini retreat at a place called Forest Houses, and that was charming and very nice, and everybody was healthy, and we had a good time.
Good.
It's a core group that used to go to Brazil together, and so they decided to keep meeting, even though they don't go to Brazil anymore, obviously.
So, do you feel anything different there, Brent? This is Scott. With Sedona Energy, do you pick up on that?
Well, I mean, you know, compared to, I like to go to my property in New Mexico, where it's pretty virginal. And it's pretty. I mean, they've done a nice job in making it more kind of tourist protected, tourist friendly. So there's more fencing, more crosswalks, things like that. But it got real touristy about a decade ago, and it's not changed that way since, you know. So you go to Sedona, but I'd like to go to Sedona because there are a couple of really amazing Native American stores that have Native American products. And so Garland's is there, Howells, H-O-E-L-S is there. And they have the highest end Native American jewelry product I've ever seen in the United States. And the biggest volume, and the family is amazing. So they have 2 stores on Oak Creek Canyon in downtown Sedona. And I was looking at a piece for like 6 months, so I decided to pick that up. So it's on layaway right now. It's a pricey little thing. It's a ceramic pot, but it's done in a Maori design. A Navajo artist etched it with amazing, amazing Maori designs and decals detail. So anyway, I went and started picking that piece up. So that will be a while before I acquire that.
Very cool.
I love their stuff. I have a number of bolos. I have like 30 bolos now. Hmm. So some of them are from Garland's. They have like storyteller bolos that are... tell a story, depict a scene of some sort. So they're quite nice.
Cool.
It looks like everybody that's here is here for now for our startup. So we can jump in.
Put your mics on mute unless you're going to be speaking, please.
Well, everybody's pretty quiet right now, so I'll leave it on for now. But if it gets loud, we can mute something or other. Any questions as we're starting?
Yes, I've got a question, Brent.
Okay.
I've a person I know, her husband, he's got 6 major head injuries. And the last one was at a mining facility, and a machine hit him in the forehead with a tremendous amount of impact. And he's had other major head injuries. He's still functional, you know, he still gets around and he talks, but they took him off a particular medication because it started to give him seizures, and he still can go to the gym and work out, and it actually makes him feel good when he works out. So it isn't like he gets overloaded when his system has to get physical. It actually relaxes him. I just wondered, have you had anybody with that many severe head injuries that you work with? Do you approach that much more cautiously? I would imagine. What do you do with something like that?
So that's so interesting you would say that, because I worked on the phone today for the first time in months with a woman that I am professionally acquainted with, whose daughter just started having seizures. And I come to find out, I'm doing this reframe, So I was kind of doing the Dave Ebel work on the mother to work on the child technique. You know, I see David already is laughing. So, yes. So I'm like, well, we're working on the mothers to work on the infants. And this is an infant. She's very young, like less than a year old. So I less than 2 years old. So I'm like, but she started having seizures. And I'm like, okay, well, she's had like 4 starting last year, last fall. And she, I think, well, first one was as a very young infant. So I think she's, maybe she's less than a year and a half, year, 2 years old. Anyway, so I talked to the mother on the phone, and I did the whole thing on the phone. So I said, well, I said, you know, her having a seizure is a trauma to you. So we need to reframe that because you were there and you saw her. I said, there's a possibility that if the seizure is a memory, when we work on the mother, we might be able to transmit the correction to the child. So we're starting to explore that as an option. But as I'm working with her on that, so she saw the child having a seizure. She went to check, heard a funny noise, went to check on the child's drooling all over the place and is kind of out of it. And that was her first sort of little, as a little infant, like a grandma seizure. And she's trembling, she's shaking. And they're like, oh my God, she's having a seizure. So then she had like a double after that. And when she ever starts to get sick, she's having like a little seizure with the onset of illness. So it sounds to me like when her immune system is down or she's weakened, she might be reliving the original seizure. So a couple of things about seizures and head traumas. Number one is, like, to answer your question, Scott, is you want to list all the head seizures, and he may not even remember them all, and there might be something in his childhood that preceded all of this. So when they have serious head traumas, any kind of seizure evidence, take a history of all of the potential concussions and head injuries. That's why my first question before I even start with the person is head, neck, spinal trauma. So you always want to go back and clear, reframe all of the head traumas. And there might be multiple scenes attached to the head trauma sequence. But you want to reframe all of the head traumas. Now, with this client, I said, if you can see her having her seizure, yes. So I said, you could put your hand on C7. If we could picture that not happening, what would you like to see happen? I'd like to see my daughter healthy, lying in the crib. Can you picture that? Yes. No seizure. Everything's fine. What color do you see? I see light purple. So she got a frequency. So I said, do it now. Run it through yourself and your child. You're connected right now. And I've been scanning people now for months since March, long distance, and I'm getting increasing detail about all kinds of connections. I scanned a woman before a session today. I started scanning her last night with permission. She's an intuitive, very gifted healer, and I know her, so we kind of trade off sometimes. And when I scanned her, I felt energy coming in at C7 from a distance, which I'm thinking might be indicative of, that's the theoretical connection of the golden cord, where a soul comes into the body or travels astrally. So when I felt that point above start to vibrate, I'm like, I think this is intergenerational from other people or past life for her. And sure enough, when we started working on the perpetrators and some things today, we ended up going through 4 generations back. She saw it 4 generations back when we cleared the pattern. But anyway, so you can scan holographically and you're going to be getting incredible detail if you are receptive to that and open your mind to that possibility. So I had most of her history mapped out before I started the session with her today. And then I scanned her actively during the session to confirm that the same sites she had last night are the same sites I'm going to work on today. So, and we did like an hour and 45 minutes and 13 memories for her, some of them level 2. But back to our story. So picking up head traumas, even at a distance. So I didn't scan the infant, which I guess I could have. I was so shocked that she was talking to me about this on the phone. I just had her visualize holding the child, connect with the child. What do you feel? Is there a color you see? What does it feel like to you? She's shaking. She's trembling. If we could change this scene, what would you like to see happen? Might have her sleep peacefully. What colors do you see? I see light purple. And she ran it through her body and the child, and we undid the original seizure memory. Now, I suggested we reframe all of them. But as I'm talking to her about that, she says, you know, it reminds me of the fact that I was in a car accident when I was pregnant with her. And I'm like, there it is. So to the fetus that's developing and is formative, car accidents, falls, injuries, falling off the changing table as an infant, these routinely have been seizure clients for me in the past. And so we reframed the car accident. And she got a different color, and the color was, you want to guess? Color was yellow, which is healing the nervous system. It heals nerve damage and nerve injury. Yellow is the color for healing nerve pain. And I'm like, it affected her nervous system. Now we've talked about this in the past, but some of you may not have been there, of clients, adults that I scanned where I felt physical impacts outside of their body at a distance of about 6 to 8 inches. Come to find out the trauma occurred to the mother while the client was in the womb, and the client imprints at a distance from the physical body and it's outside in the field. And I felt where the mother fell down the stairs and the fetus felt the impact. Now, the weird part is, this is where traditional medicine will not know what to do with us, is the pain, physical pain to my hand was not too close to their physical body as an adult. It was 6 inches away. So as a child, what was 6 inches away was her mother's body that received the impact. So if while the child is in the womb, the mother gets punched, the fetus very likely is imprinting. And the distance in the adult's body will appear actually outside of the physical body of the adult at the distance that the fetus was away from the site in the mother where the impact occurred. Does that make sense? What I'm talking about, I've talked about that in the past. So you reframe it like, okay, kind of weird. If you're in the energy and you feel that's where it was helpful, I would have not known that's there, nor would I have ever asked the question if I hadn't been scanning the client energetically. Now, this is interesting because you can do energy and you don't have to touch your client ever. Carrie Hussman, Carrie's here. What's here? Oh, I think we're still here. Right now I see a lion. But Carrie's going to join us. I'm sure she's not already here. But we can scan people at a distance and still do the work. The more sensitive you get, once you learn what certain sensations feel like, it's equally easy to do it long distance. Now, as far as head injuries go, the doctors treat the body. They treated him physically for his head injuries. They have not reframed, and it's probably 98% likely nobody has ever done any trance work or reframed that man's 6 head injuries. They have probably not done anything with that, Scott. So yes, you know, I tried talking to a couple of people at trauma clinics, head traumas. They're like, where's your data? Where's your research? We want, you know, so when it comes to vets and things like that, until we can show the QEGs prior, the change in the brain after HMR, they're probably not going to take us that seriously for the head trauma, serious head traumas. Now, the reporting of the changes would be nice, but we literally need to show the change in the physiology of the brainwave patterns. And we can do that. We can do that now. That's what our original QEG showed. One of the client that was the one that did the most memories had an impact to her head from a boyfriend banging her into a wall. You could see the impact point on the wall, on her head, where she hit the wall, and you could see the change in the intensity of that site in the QEG after we reframed it. So we need to do this. It'd be nice if we just had QEG instruments at all the HMR clinics we're planning to create in the major cities. But for now, to be able to demonstrate that it creates that change in the brain pattern. So we do know, I do believe it has a profound effect with head traumas. And along with, there can be organicity, there could be brain damage, there could be brain bleeds, there could be all kinds of things from the head traumas that are physiological. But how will you know if you don't reframe the memory first? How do you know what's purely physiological? They're assuming first that it's all damage and that it's injury a lot of the time. And there are cases when I reframed it and the migraines are gone. That's one of our most successful areas of application of HMR is people start having migraines and or seizures after they have a major head trauma. And so when you reframe car accidents, whiplash, seizures, whenever they say seizure and migraines, you're in HMR territory. We're going to reframe this. Now, there are cases when I've done HMR and it didn't touch the migraines. But the sequence of the head trauma memories to the person, you're going to have to follow the client's cues and go through the whole, and it can people, I was talking to a psychiatrist, and one of them is a friend of Bessel van der Kolk's, actually. So I may end up having him call Bessel and put in a good word for us. But he's like, your technique is so simple, but so elegant. And the fact that you're articulating the change, and I did it without the software. I just worked on somebody in Sedona that asked me to. And they all observed, watched me do it. And they were like, it's so simple, but elegant. When you, I make it look easy. I make it look simple. Because the longer you do it, it does get kind of simple. But I also have a client I worked on today that had like 13 memories with sub-memories and layers and sequencing and things like that. And that was not so simple because it went intergenerational, five back generations. And one of the interruptions was what happened to the father that led to the disruption in the second memory. And so understand, having a way to map the complexity of the sequencing gives us the resources to say, okay, physician, this is why her pain went away. But this is the complexity of the sequencing of how it was layered in the body. And this is the HMR psychosurgical interventions we did with color to release the attachments to those events. Whatever pain is left, you may have to treat medically, but a huge percentage of pain goes away when they haven't treated the memory. So with his head traumas, especially if seizures are starting, after so many seven-year cycles and leaving a head trauma in place, the body will begin to seize, I believe. As like, hello, excuse me, you haven't dealt with the head traumas. And so now we're manifesting. Now, one catalytic event, like this is his sixth head trauma, all you got to do is throw in a six on top of the previous five, and there's a very good chance the guy will start having seizures. But he has a prehistory of five setups for this to start happening. And the sixth is the straw that breaks the camel's back, which happens a lot.
A little thing,
and then it occurs. Now, as to the sequencing, you might just want to do, sometimes I just take it chronologically and go through the whole chronological sequence. In others, I'll like, let your body map it. I don't have the answer to that perfectly, but I do know I want to make sure I've reframed all six head traumas. And then I want to go back to the body and see if there are things that were traumatized as a child that nobody labeled a head trauma that might have set this up.
Well, this particular client, he tells his wife, a few months ago, he said, I've gone 6 years without a serious head trauma. I'm due because every 6 years I have a serious head trauma, so it's due. And then a few weeks later, he at work, he had this major injury. And so his belief system almost helps attract it, create it.
Oh, it's not just, it's actually, he's telling you, the genius is telling you the cycle. He's telling you, I'm on a 6-year cycle. The first head trauma, and the one that reinforced it 6 years later, has created a reinforcement pattern on the 6-year cycle. Routinely, the body replicates every 7 years. So even lesser traumas will start appearing stronger or repeat themselves after 7, 14, 21 years. So when some tumor or something shows up with cancers in people, the day will come and we're going to start going back what happened 7 years ago, what happened 15 years ago, what happened 21 years ago. And it's not uncommon for people to freak out like, oh my God, that's the year I divorced the alcoholic abusive husband. And before I left, I was sure I was going to get sick. And like here we are 21 years later and I am getting sick now. But I divorced him, but I didn't reframe any memories from his abuse. The abuse is still going on in the subconscious. She hasn't reframed the trauma history. And there's no time in the subconscious, so it's still going on. She never left the marriage. It just takes so many replications of the cell mitosis cycles for it to actually appear in the system. So, yes. So we do want to go back. And he said it's a 6-year cycle. So I'd go back, do the first one, do the one first, and 6 years later. Reframe both of those and say, yes, if you want this to stop happening to you, because you know the human energy field is supposed to be white light. When a trauma occurs, a black, red, very specific signature is inserted for the trauma in the field. And when you're walking through life with that void created, if any event, machine, object similar to what they have stored comes along, they will represent and reattract the same event over and over again. And that's true for illnesses, patterns, migraines, you know, other kinds of chronic pain conditions. If something similar comes along, or a similar person, a smell, a sound, a feeling, or the event itself or machine or working, yes, it can certainly represent itself. And he's literally saying, hello, people out there. Is anybody bright enough to notice my 6-year cycle here? And he said, yeah, well, it's been about 6 years. And like, holy mackerel, you know, and here you are, Scott, able to maybe step in and do some reframing with him. That would be great. I'd reframe, start with number one. If you can go back and do the first one, that's where it's originating. I would not be surprised if you went to his body and just said, when you think about all that's happened to you, how, when we ask, you know, that's where my language developed originally 20 years ago. How old might you be when you first feel this kind of pain in your head or anxiety or trauma tied to your head? And the body will typically go back to that event, or to your surprise, there might be 3 childhood concussions or traumas that set up the mining, first trauma at work or whatever. So be open to the answer to that, but I would reframe the first one to begin with.
Are there any physical reactions or anything that you would be concerned about if you were working with someone who is carrying that amount of head injury, which has got to be a lot of stored energy? I mean, mm-hmm. like with severe emotional trauma, some clients, if they don't learn a way to calm themselves, like breathing, could have panic attacks under some types of trauma release. Do you ever anticipate or watch out for anything when you've got a buildup of head trauma like that? Is there anything to inquire about, to look at?
I have not experienced it in the 30,000 clients I've done. I have not seen anyone go into that state. I've had people get reactive and go into a stronger memory, like what's going on? You know, oh, I'm scared now. There's a bigger memory. Okay, well, let's use your, that's why you and I, we always establish safety. So make sure the safety protocols are in place and that he's learned to send safety through his body. I'm in a calm state. There's no pain. I'm in a very comfortable location, you know, whatever, and use his own brainwave frequencies and teach him the breathing, the cyclical breathing to kind of keep himself calm. So once you've established that safety, I've not seen that. That's a case, though, if there's neurological challenges where it would be nice. Although, you know, here's the thing. The only cases where we've had seizure reactions to HMR weren't because of HMR per se, but there were 3 cases, I think 3 to 5 cases. I don't remember how many anymore. I think it was at least 3 cases at Cottonwood Treatment Center when they just sent me clients into my trauma group. And I put my hand on C7 and the client started doing this, like a little mini seizure response, but they weren't actually going to a seizure, but the nervous system started jerking like it was prepping for a seizure. And I took my hand off and it stopped. Then I put my hand back and started again. Like, what the heck is this? So after it happened the first time and I found out what it was, for the 2 subsequent clients, I said, why are you here? Oh, I was addicted to cocaine. And what's happening? And I'm on phenobarbital to detox from cocaine. I said, when did you last use? It's like 3 days ago, 4 days ago. I'm on phenobarb. I said, I will not do the energy technique with you. The energy technique enhances sensory access to memory by speeding up data flow and does a couple, I don't know what all it does, but it does speed up data flow while creating an alpha theta calm brainwave state. However, if you're stimulating brainwave states on a person that's already overstimulated and you increase, so they've always said in Healing Touch, and Carrie, if you're here, Carrie, are you Carrie? I'll see her picture's here, she's coming, I guess. But Carrie could probably tell you, in Healing Touch, they used to say, don't do Healing Touch on an active cocaine addict that's still detoxing. Because you start applying energy to the body of a person that's, and this is a precaution for all of you, you start applying energy to a person that's detoxing, and it stimulates the nervous system. You don't want to be stimulating anyone's nervous system when they're getting off a stimulant. Okay, that's the no-no, one of the contraindications of HMR. We don't do the energy part. You don't lay hands. You don't do intensification of energy in the field. So you wouldn't do like chakra balancing with Healing Touch or something like that, or do cranial sacral work on a client that's detoxing from cocaine. If you stimulate the flow of energy and increase that flow, they go into, now they weren't actually in a full-blown seizure, but the 3 to 5 times, and every time they started to jerk, like they, the body was like tensing and starting to go in something like a seizure, and I stopped. I was like, are you by any chance on phenobarbital? Yeah, how did you know that? I said, because you're detoxing from cocaine, and we can't do HMR with you until you're fully out, cleared from the stimulant. It's out of your system, and we're not, I said, I'll do the verbal part with you, but I don't know if I even want to go there. I said, because the color and the colors you use, you stimulate your system slightly. We don't want to accelerate your detox. We want to heal your memories when you're already detoxed, grounded, stabilized, and it's okay for us then to do the reframing. So you don't do energy parts. So even the same thing, if breathing stimulates the system. Now, if you do something that calms the system, you're probably fine. So that's the thing I would say. You don't stimulate the system of necessarily of a person with the head traumas or injuries, but if you can calm them down. Now, if they've had a history of head traumas, for me to monitor it and feel that and actually send in calming energy creates a safety space for them to do this scary head trauma reframe and enables them to do it faster and easier. And I feel the physical discharge from the major head trauma. I feel the physical pain leave, and I know the trance is left. So the good part is if they're stabilized and grounded, but I've not ever had a client where HMR stimulated the system to somehow exacerbate the memory. Not that it isn't possible. We could trigger something that's so repressed. Part of the mind wants to work on it. Part of the mind doesn't want to work on it. And they're left temporarily in a state of discomfort. But that's where I'd say, well, let's just make sure your body's safe and let it know we're not going to work on anything that you're not ready to work on. But to answer your question, quite honestly, in the 30,000, 150,000 memories, I've not had anybody worsen. But then my targeted population has not been strictly head traumas either. So I can't tell you, I probably worked on maybe, I don't know, a couple of thousand whiplashes. It's more than that, be like tens, 20,000 whiplashes, I don't know. But I've not had anybody with whiplash phenomenon get worse or deepen into something like that from that kind of reframing. So.
Well, and Brent, when I used to teach breathing at the residential treatment center for addicts, the first time I taught breathing to one particular client, she'd only been there, I think about a week, and she started to go into a seizure within 2 minutes, and I brought her down with having her focus on colors, and it brought her down within about 30 seconds. So, yeah. So we avoided that, but she told me after that she was in withdrawal from drugs that she had used, I don't know, 5-6 days earlier. And I didn't realize that you can't even teach breathing, which usually is very soothing and calming and empowering to the system if they're in that detox state, because the body can't handle it, like you said.
Okay, that's good to know, because that's the thing I found. Like, you just don't, even if it's really good for them, if they're still in a hyperstimulated state, any kind of shift could possibly produce the trigger reaction, and then they're going into like a seizure response or something like that. So, yeah, so I think that's the only contraindication. Find out if your client's detox, if we're inpatient, find out if the client's detoxing from any drugs, particularly stimulants, and do not do the energy. I wouldn't even do HMR until they're fully detoxed. Although I've told you the story, I worked on a guy who was still half drunk. It was a Vietnamese guy who had been fighting the Khmer Rouge. And as soon as he started to detox and get off the alcohol, he started having violent flashbacks and it was destroying the detox room. So the treatment center came to me and said, can you work on a guy that's still like half drunk? And I said, I'm not sure, but I'll try. I said, if he's that violent, he's not having trouble accessing the memories. It's in a destructively violent, uncontrolled state. Let's see if the HMR might give him some control. So I think same thing, breathing. If I had cyclical breathing, I'd say, let's breathe the color. I think I actually did have him breathe color anyway. But I said, you know, close your eyes. Is there a safe place in nature? Yes, yes. What would your color be? Green. Okay, let's green. So I want you to start breathing green through your body. So he started breathing, he started calming down a little bit. And I said, can you see the images? Oh, yes. Is there one particular, like, yes, I can see that. And usually the military will say, I can't tell you, I have to kill you, you know, kind of thing. I can't disclose what I saw. Like, I don't need to know what you saw. I need to know that you're seeing where this happened And can you see the moment of overwhelm? Yes. Can you see the feeling? Yes. Can you change that? What would you like to have seen happen? And I did that 5 times with him, with violent. I mean, he was just having flashback after flashback from Vietnam. And he reframed it, saw a color, ran the color through, got calmer, calmer. He went to sleep at the end of that and slept for 3 days and didn't do anything else to the detox room. He was fine. But that's where it's literally, they're in danger because it's jumping out, he's decompensated, he's jumping out of his body. And if you can do something and get into dialogue, he had enough access to the memory, it was so vivid, that he could actually transmit the safety signal. And then he went through detox, and then I worked on some more memories after he got out of detox. So those are a few weird things that have happened that I've seen in patients over the years. But generally, you with cocaine, that was on alcohol, though, and he was getting off the alcohol. So the thing that was depressing his memories was no longer there. So at the 2-year mark, usually for an alcoholic, all their memories hit the fan. So Alcoholics Anonymous has always tried. My fastest clients I've ever done, including the one more recently, he never did less than 12 to 20 memories per session, was a yoga master, instructor, taught meditation, but went through 5 treatments, attempted 3 that were moderately good. One that was really successful by he was 23. He's in his late 30s now. So when he, what was I saying about that? He was able to access, he did 12-step programs for years. The only thing he didn't do was get closure to the icons of memory that were all over his body. He did all the talking, did the step work he talked about. He listed it, remembered all the memories, what he did, tried to make amends for what he did. But nobody released the icons of pain storage from the memories from his body. And so he'd be like, oh, it's to the right of my heart. It's a little bit inside. It's like a quarter inch, you know, a little bit black with silver on the edge. And I'm 6 and I can see my father hitting me. Okay, do we need to go further? No, if we could change that, what would you like to see happen? Okay, I see green with a little bit of blue and orange with a patina of, you know, bronze. Okay, run that through your heart. Oh, now it's a little bit higher around my heart, but it's still on the inside under the surface. Now it's black with a thin pinstripe kind of running through it. Like, okay. And he was that, I said I wanted to videotape you something because people will see how metaphors contain memories and that they're perfect. They're perfect expressions and containers for what you want to work on. And every time I'd work on him, he was flawless when he did it. I mean, he was unbelievable. I basically was just the violin that he was playing. And the more skilled the facilitator, the faster the client can go if you pick up the cues. Like, okay, he's moving on to the next memory. How do you feel? Great, but now it's in my right shoulder. Now it's in my left knee. Now it's back to my throat. Okay. And he'd be bopping around. And people in 12-step programs have done everything but get the containers out of the system in some cases. And so that's what they're really striving for, is to get those containers cleared. But yeah, so the detox piece is very interesting. You have to watch that piece. I had one guy, his addiction was to crystal meth. And I've never seen anything written about this. When he used crystal meth, the reason he used crystal meth, he had a sister that was handicapped that he took care of most of his life. When he used crystal meth in all of his dreams, his sister would be completely normal. He's like, what the heck is that? So I don't know what the crystal meth did to his brain, but it took away the subconscious grief, sadness, trauma from his sister's handicap and presented her in the subconscious in a healthy light. So different people can have really, you need to find out what their reaction to their drug is. Like people with ADD, a lot of times the trauma isn't the cocaine or the stimulant. It's like, I got the guy that was sent to me that had 3 inpatient treatments, failed them all, ran away from treatment every time. And I said, every time I tried to take a history though, he'd shift language and go to tell me a story and start cyclically spiraling. And I was like, okay. I said, you know, what was your drug of choice? He said, cocaine. I said, when you took cocaine, did you speed up or slow down? He's like, oh, I go to sleep. I relax. I watch everybody bouncing off the walls. I was like, you know, the biggest problem you have here is you're truly ADD. I said, and you probably need some limited, reasonable stimulant or something substitute for that. I still don't think some people just need the medication, but a little bit of Adderall or Ritalin, he made straight A's. It was brilliant. But when he do cocaine, he used it to try to contain, which nobody was picking up on, was his ADD symptoms and processing. So find out if they have a drug history, find out the drug of choice, what are they using, how does that drug affect their system, and is there a history they're using it for, what that looks like. But yeah, so I've done people still part drunk sometimes. It's not my ideal. Now, I'm at a spa, so people sign up for sessions, and sometimes they got slightly slurred speech or something. I'm like, do you have an alcohol issue? So then I do the THIQ talk, tetrahydroxyquinoline talk. You know, AA has accepted the THIQ theory that the brain converts alcohol into a narcotic similar to heroin. The heroin accumulates in the brain over time. Eventually, it overflows into short-term memory, and they get blackouts. And if it maxes out, they can't, because it explains, the THIQ theory explains the elevator theory. You can do an internet search on THIQ. It explains the elevator theory. The level of narcotic accumulation in the brain will always remain the same. So if they stop for 10 days, 20 days, 40 days, 40 years, the day they go back, they'll pick up at the THIQ level they stopped at. So once the addiction there is always there. So anyway, but I think today we might be talking about seizures and head injuries and head traumas. You have to get the history of the head traumas and try to map, reframe all of the injuries. The first one set it up. The second one reinforced it. Beyond that, they're all reinforcements of earlier. And so I would go through the whole sequence and make a list and reframe all of them and give them all the time they need. So make a note of what the colors. You're going to see blues and yellows. Whenever I've had migraines, head traumas, your two most dominant colors you're going to see are blue for calming and yellow for correcting a neurological impairment. So yellow actually heals nerve damage or nerve injury. So you can see quite a bit of yellow going through there. The first research subject I ever did, one of the 10 subjects, was a little girl at 8 who had started having seizures the year before. She was a forceps delivery, so I reframed that. And all the memories we reframed, except for waking up and her mother screaming hysterically, the four memories, three of them she had no memory of. So conscious access to the memory is not required. But I say, can you imagine your birth? Can your mom talk about that a little bit, your birth? Well, when she was born, she was stuck, so they had to do forceps. It's like, okay. Well, let's imagine changing that and have an easy birth, smooth birth to your mommy. Can you picture that? Nowadays, I think we could probably, what David was saying, we might be able to simply have the mother hold the daughter or be next to the daughter and reframe her memory of the birth. And the color she sees would be for her body and the child. And we could run those colors through both of them. So I'm curious to see if the woman I worked on today, if her child ever has another seizure or not. Because I'll be checking in with her. And if the light purple, and then she said, oh, I was in a car accident. My dad's like, oh, Lord. It took Americans forever to admit trauma-induced seizure disorder. And I know for a fact that a blow to the mother. And she said, oh, this was interesting. She said, when I had the car accident, the fetus didn't move for 36 hours. There was no movement. She was like in a frozen stasis state. I was like, holy mackerel. I said, the fetus went into a frozen state, a trance state. I was like, yes. I said, I'm pretty almost certain. I said that your daughter's recent seizures are probably from the car. It wasn't her fault. It's not your fault. No judgment. I said, it just happened. But I said, the doctors don't know. And she's done like three alternative therapies. She's doing traditional things. They're looking at nutrition to make sure the seizures don't happen. She's only had four that she's aware of. But I said, if this stops completely and you never see another seizure, I said, it probably was from the car accident. I said, definitely a fetus of an accident of that severity. She said, oh yeah, she didn't move for like 36 hours. We were afraid she had died or something was horrible happening. And then she started moving and she was okay, but she was frozen like in stasis. She wasn't budging. I was like, that's like a send a signal, don't move, don't do anything, freeze. So it looks like the fetus goes into a pause, T-1 freeze state when the mother goes through a trauma. So just file that one away, folks, because, you know, as soon as we talk about it, you're probably going to get a client walking in with this issue or something like it that you'll pick up on. But the fetus is freezing. Oh, Karen's showing us the brain waves of the seizure. That's the seizure client. Yeah.
That's the QEEG, and that's the propensity to seize. This is pre-HMR one session, and this is post-HMR one session. And the neurotherapist who was working with her was just beside himself at the difference in the brain after one session. Because the seizure is the brain trying to balance itself.
Yeah.
Can I get a copy of that? Because I may have a potential client from here that her daughter's having seizures. It's really interesting that we're having this conversation. And I told her she should try HMR. I would love to do that with her.
Sure. I think the research, we can forward that to Evan.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh,
yep. And Brett, talking about Scott's question, what I have found when I try to do things chronologically, I may get some resistance. But if I let the body decide which event it's going to work on first, it's just amazing that we don't get resistance because the body is okay with the sequence.
Right. And that's what I'd say. Now, even when I was working on a client today and we started with the history and we started with some events that were going on. And during the event history, I was going to go chronologically to make sure in the time we had, we covered all the things that could be creating her condition. It's not the child, it's somebody else. And when I got to the fourth memory, which would have been in chronological sequence, she's like, oh, it won't let me go there. I can't access it. Why is that? And this was supposed to be like at 18. She says, oh, look, there's a trauma. I forgot about this at 16. So literally, you can suggest it. But if you ask, when you think about that, where do you feel in your body? I can't go there. Why is that? The client's body will interrupt you and show you the correction. So she interrupted it and showed me the memory at 15, 16. And after we did that, then we could go straight to the 17 car accident later on. So you can ask about it and the client's given it to you. But if the body sometimes will collaborate, has no problem with it. And like you said, other times if there's a resistance, there's a reason for the resistance. They're like, no, you're not going to push us into that. We're not ready for that. There's a bunch of things that are missing here. So that's where the body, the spontaneous mapping by the body, I prefer to work that way, really. I like to say, and after I've talked about all this and taken the history, I'm like, as you talk about all this, where do you feel it the most in your body? What are you feeling right now as we're starting? And you may not work on any of the memories that you thought you were going to work on that day. You might have a whole prehistory session of the major event. But usually by the end of three quarters into the session, they'll get to the memory that they thought they were going to target or work on. But the sequencing can vary considerably.
So Brett, yes. Sorry to interrupt, seizures can be like, I guess, the falling out on the floor and unconscious, and it can also be just staring off into space, can't it? So
there are different kinds of seizures. That is true.
So we're talking about the same thing that initiated it, head injury or something, no matter how the seizure might show up, probably?
Yes, I don't think I've ever had anybody go into like a grand mal. Well, it's somebody in the chair that looked like a grand mal seizure, like she was going unconscious. But as soon as she went through it, she started muttering under her breath, and you can't talk after a major seizure. So that was my first major seizure case around 1995, 96. She was sent to me by two psychologists from Lubbock, Texas, because every time they tried to do memory work with her, hypnosis, anything, she'd have a seizure and she would be inaccessible. And they were like, we're going to send you to work with Brandon Tucson. And like, who's that? Whatever. So they sent her. And I saw her, I went to work on a memory, we went to, when you feel it, where you feel my body, my throat, inside, outside, inside. And then suddenly she was having a seizure on the chair. And I'm like, oh my God, quick, call the medical team, let's see what's going on. And so he came in and observed her, the nurses. But then as soon as she was coming out of the memory, I put my hand on C7, I was like, use your colors, trying to talk to her, use your colors, remember the colors we had created color, breathe it through your body, she was calming down. And so she stayed fairly accessible. And then she started talking, and I'm like, you can't do that right after a seizure. This is not a seizure. This is the relive of a seizure. Mm. And most seizures are relives of an earlier or original seizure, if it's memory-based. There are other causes. I mean, you got bad seafood in Louisiana, and poor Karen eats a bad shrimp, and she could have a food poisoning seizure from bad crab or seafood or something. you know, or maybe too much television with the Trump on TV. And no, I'm just kidding. I have a Trump seizure. Oh my God, I'm dying. We're all dying right now. So anyway, we want to go back to this. So, you know what, where this started is I was in Japan when they, and this is where it was invented, the name came from. I was in Japan at one time and they did, if you ever seen Japanese TV, you really want to go on an antidepressant. You're like, oh my God, it's time to kill myself or slit my wrist. You know, this is, it's like flashing lights with little figures jumping up and down, kind of psychotic. And you're like, oh, if I wasn't ADD before I am now, or I need a drug or a sedative. So you're going to go crazy. And all these little things are flashing and they're doing flashing lights. And it's like hyper overstimulation. Well, like 80 children went into seizure from this TV program and were rushed to independent hospitals. And they're like, what is this surge in children at this time of day from this? What were you watching? Suddenly they discovered you flash certain lights in a certain sequence and the body will go into a seizure. So then they termed it transient seizure disorder, that it actually was created by oversensory overstimulation. It was an act, wasn't epilepsy. It was a transient seizure disorder. It passes. But once you've done that and stimulated the brain and you go into trauma, now once a seizure occurs, a seizure is a traumatic state to the nervous system for most people. And so once the seizure actually occurs, you have two problems. You have the actual source of the seizure, which could be Japanese TV. And then you have the actual seizure, which is freaking your nervous system out. So you're taking a picture of the seizure. So now it just takes a couple of flashing lights and you could be reliving the Japanese original seizure event. And then they're going to think you're epileptic and give you phenobarbital or whatever they give you nowadays. So like, okay, so they figured this out. I'm like, oh, so we're now going to call this transient seizure disorder. Don't flash these lights on TV and don't let your children watch this kind of TV or whatever. And they kind of figured that part out. But that's where transient seizure disorder came from. And they realized there can be a fairly harmless source for a seizure. And I did this on the phone with one client. They gave her a diagnosis of epilepsy because she'd had three seizures. And I found the original, which occurred after a minor car accident. But we reframed that. We reframed the accident. We reframed the original seizure and the two others. And she's never had another one to my knowledge. And I've never met her. I just talked to her on the phone and did it. So I think there's a protocol. We probably would say if you know any people and your client happens to have seizures or family member, see if you can access and reframe the original. If it's a child, maybe you have the mother who witnessed it. So my client was there in the room connected to her child energetically when she had her first seizure. For some reason, they had the baby in a bassinet near the bed that night. She wasn't always in their room, but this night the baby was in the room. And the mother woke up feeling the child in distress. So I'm like, I think you went through the seizure with her. So I'm going to try to reframe the seizure event through you and see if we can not have the seizure and picture it. And that's when she got the light purple. And that's when she said, you know, I've often wondered if when she I was pregnant with her, that car accident I had. I'm like, oh my God. And I was like, okay, let's undo that too on the phone as well. So we're going to reframe that. And so the color is yellow. I'm like, there's neurology, nerve system repair when the yellow comes up. So the color confirmation, the seizure thing, I said, okay, so she's connected to the baby originally in the womb, and now the seizure, she's in the room. So I'm like, let's see if we can undo this. I'm pretty confident that she's not going to have any other seizures, but we'll see if that's what it really was. I think it was basically a car accident. She said, oh, yeah, and then they took x-rays. She wasn't moving. She didn't move for like 36 hours or something, and then she started moving again. I'm like, okay, let's run colors through her waterfall for the next few days. So I'm quite excited about that. So yes, like what Karen said, go to the body, but the body, if you miss anything, the body's going to throw up the curve. The problem was the mother of the eight-year-old had to tell me the history because the eight-year-old did. But you know, the interesting part is the minute I touched her, I was nauseated, which for me has been my strongest somatic signal as an empath, is like nausea, like, oh, concussion. So I touched her and I was like, I haven't taken any history. I said, but does this child have concussions? Well, she was a forceps delivery. She was bruised when she came out and she fell off the changing table when we rushed her to the hospital, and her mother's a physician, right? Rushed her to the hospital and they said she was fine. They're not gonna pick up on this. They have no capacity to determine if it's imprinted. It's such a subtle energy form for an infant or a fetus They probably have no knowledge. They don't know what to look for. It might show up in a brain scan of, I don't know if the fetus's brain is developed enough, but it's in the meridians. Eventually it will show up. But I think by the time she reached this age, this child started having seizures. So anyway, that's a little bit, but yes. So you may be able to do some work with that.
There's usually too much fluid around the brain until I think about one, because Bodhi had a scan, so I know that. Yeah, I had to wait. I actually waited for a few years to make sure there was more development before I had his brain scan, and he was fine.
That's good to know. Yeah, I don't know what would show up or not, be able to not show up. I don't know if our instruments are sensitive enough. But if I touch or scan and I'm nauseated, there's a concussion in this entity in front of me, a concussion-like effect, because it affects the stomach. So, and that's the other thing is when I've been working on scanning long distance, when I'm getting head traumas, I'll often get a stomach reaction, a queasy thing. So I'm starting to get patterns between the nerve plexes showing up, like, oh, she had something happen to the right base of her head that is creating an issue with her digestion and her stomach. So you're going to start linking sites from the memories and see connections. And I asked, sometimes I ask, I was like, did your, I forgot what it was, a couple of them had different things happen to the back of the ear. It wasn't necessarily a concussion, but a fall or an injury. I said, were you like nauseated afterwards? Oh, I threw up right after that. Or mom and dad are fighting and I'll get it from the ears or the head and the jaw. I think one of them, their jaw was so tight. And then I felt a wave of nausea and I'm like, okay. I said, what's going on? Oh, mom and dad, this is the first time I remember they got so violent fighting. He banged mom into the wall and he was drunk. And I was just so scared, I threw up. And I'm like, there it is. She was so terrified and traumatized that when she saw her mother being abused, her jaw tensed, she clenched and froze, and she threw up. So the stomach and the jaw were tied together. So run the colors through your jaw and through your stomach as the reframe for that memory to make sure that you've completely cleared those sites. That's where you develop your empathy. It's helpful because you can ask questions. I don't tell them, I'm not sure I'm correct, but I always ask it as a question. Did you have stomach problems tied to mom and dad fighting? Oh, all the time I had stomach aches. That's, you know. So the stomach is the second brain, you know, more neurons in your whole spinal cord. So we need to look at that. So yes, indeed. Good. Other questions or questions tied to this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A couple things. One is I have a family member who's been on meth for 40 years. Mm-hmm. He's been clean for a month. Do people go and do they detox from meth? I don't know what the...
Oh, now that I can't answer that one for you. I'm not sure what they're using nowadays. I mean, often they have to put them on some other kind of medication to get them off the crystal meth. It's, you know, sometimes they haven't been eating for weeks or days or something like that. There's just all kinds of stuff like that. They'll stay awake for days and, you know, so it takes quite a while for them. But I'm not sure. They come out with new medications and drugs to get them off the crystal meth. But I don't know what the detox protocol. That's where it would be nice to have Mary Gaddy here with us at some point.
Yeah, Brent, I was just going to say he isn't getting any guidance from this. He's just clean on his own, so to speak.
Okay.
Yeah. So. Okay. Well, I'll look into it and see.
Scott, is that you? And you're Lawrence, or who is talking?
Scott, I think.
Scott, Brent, in Colorado, meth is about 90% of all addictions. It's not cocaine. So the clients that I saw predominantly were meth addicts, and I don't recall I wasn't involved in their detox, but I don't recall a lot of severe issues with getting off of meth as other drugs like heroin or mm-hmm. or some other ones, but those clients are severely addicted, and it doesn't it doesn't clear up in a week. I mean, the body might be shifting quite a bit in that first week, but it takes many, many weeks to truly get past that. I mean, it's months until their body is kind of back to a healthy state. So, you know, a week is basically nothing, and even a few weeks isn't really that much, but it's a very strong addiction.
Yeah,
it is. It's pretty vicious. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure if we can talk to. We might be Glenda. Glenda, your mic is off. Let's see. Jeanette, can you activate Glenda's mic?
There we go. There we go. My impression working with the foster care review boards for 13 years, that meth was at least as difficult to get off from as heroin. That's what I was told. That it's just very difficult to stay off. Take it as you will.
Yeah, well, evidently it is.
I've known some people meth addicted, and it's just not a pretty picture at all.
No,
it's difficult, and they have relapse. They have
trouble.
It also depends how it interacts with your system as to how much dependency, psychological, emotional dependency. There's something else I want to mention to you also. It's a different train. Are we, any other questions about that? Things that I'm looking at that we're going to be seeing?
Uh-huh. This is Carrie, and hey. I just wanted to let you guys know that my experience with meth has in Iowa, because we've had plenty of it too, is that, you know, whenever they get sober, they stop, and a lot of times they relapse within days or weeks. Mm-hmm. But the cravings and the dysphoria are probably the two most challenging aspects treating them post recovery, or as they're recovering and staying clean from it, is that these cravings are so incredibly intense. Mm-hmm. And the dysphoria is really not cleared if they use. This dysphoria sticks if it's been chronic use over years, like it is with so many. Mm-hmm. And so trying to address that dysphoria, but I mean, my gosh, with HMR, there is just a plethora of opportunity because of all the shame, the guilt, all the things that it's done to ruin their lives. I mean, my gosh, this is just so much fun. So I'm actually working with a guy. I've seen him since 2004, and he had a 20-year methamphetamine history prior to that, treating his own ADHD. So he was using low doses, but chronically, and he was cooking. And he didn't get caught. All his friends either died or went to prison. And those are the two things that we've worked on. And we're doing HMR right now for physical pain issues, but that's our next step, is we're going to try to, if he's comfortable with it, work on some of the cravings that he still struggles with despite being sober this many years.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, it's an excellent technique for relapse triggers. And like you said, some of it is the shame, the sadness, or really good. If they can go gently and step into those emotions and say, we're only going to work on what we can work on for today. If you get tired, let me know, you know, and reframe the trauma and the shame from the addiction itself. At some point, that's the emotional trauma accompanying addiction always. And so it sounds like you're doing great work. Keep us posted how that progresses. Addicts have, are you gonna have an addict that doesn't have a serious trauma history accompanying this? You know, it modifies your, alcohol is a depressant, marijuana is a depressant. The things that either stimulate you into mania or depression, you're violating your moral values. And whenever you do that and hurt people, others, or yourself, that's a trauma state. So sometimes it's the trauma we did to others, sometimes the trauma we did to ourselves as an addict, something like that. But there's a lot of reframing that goes into that. So it can be years, like Carrie's saying, it can take years. And they can be fragile. The personalities can be fragile, and you have to take your time in what they're comfortable with, maintain safety, give them resources over time. But they start feeling better over time. But that's a long path. That is difficult. Okay. Anything else about that or questions for Carrie? You're good. So one thing that I'm seeing, which I saw today for one of my clients, is the viral compromise of the immune system. What we're going to start seeing with HMR with COVID is once COVID does its major assault on the immune system, whatever prehistory of trauma they have is going to emerge. And so one client had a Baker's cyst after COVID. It was like a knot as a child. As an adult, after COVID, it flared up and took over her whole leg, practically, her upper leg, and had to be surgically intervened upon. But these are people not only with COVID. The thing you look for is a prehistory of viruses. Like a client I worked on today that had that's been having some really bizarre health issues. I was like, okay, do you think you're, yeah, I think I had COVID earlier in the year. Okay, do you have viruses in the past? Oh, I had chickenpox twice as a child. Then I got mononucleosis as a teen, which we were reframing. We reframed our childhood chickenpox. And then I had mono as a teenager. Then I had Epstein-Barr when I was in college. And I've had shingles twice. And she said, after I had COVID, shingles came up. I said, yep, that's the pattern. So once the immune system is compromised, you take a major viral hit, whatever previous vulnerabilities the client's body has will recur. It will emerge. So one thing I've started doing is reframe all the previous viral events. So we literally went back and saw colors and reframed your chickenpox as a child, reframed the mono as a teen. Went in and reframed the Epstein-Barr as a young adult, late adolescent, and then reframed her shingles attacks. And every time she got calmer and felt better and got the right color, she got colors. So having a virus is a trauma to the system, but it's also building on the prehistory. So we're using the memory of the virus to try to neutralize the effects of virus and see what happens with that. And that adds a whole other thing to psychoneuroimmunology. So how much can we affect the viral memory in the body, and how much of COVID is playing on actual damage from viruses, or how much of COVID is activating unreframed memories of the trauma from previous viruses? All of her viral events she had as a child were kind of traumatic for different emotional reasons. So when we reframe the emotional content of the virus, so how much of the virus effect is being maintained by trance states? That becomes a very interesting and complex psychoneuroimmunological question. Is it possible, if mind creates body from a quantum perspective, how much of the memory of the virus is maintaining the viral load in the body, or the viral memory, and how much is actual viral damage? So as we heal these viruses, we have people where it all goes away. Everything has disappeared, the side effects. You know, I'm trying to think if there's somebody. When the clients that I worked on that had HIV, when I did 3 sessions and they got sober, they called back 3 weeks later and said, my T cells have skyrocketed in a fairly short amount of time. I'm considered in remission. In clients where Dr. Mariko Tanaka did it on HIV patients in San Francisco, after a couple of sessions, when they went back to test, they were having trouble finding the viral load in the system. They couldn't find the virus easily. So that might be a targeted population too. You know, we need to see what's going on, the impact of HMR on viruses. That's how I got into the field, is the weird, quirky thing my family does with healing viruses. You know, touch warts, fever blisters, things like that. Yvonne Hedeker found, after she did enough of this in practice with me, that she could actually touch warts, viruses, and people's viruses right away. So she did a lot of work on herself and raised her vibration to a point where also the contact point just got rid of viruses, killed viruses. So I'm not quite sure what's happening to your body with HMR, but I'm sure your medical team is supportive of whatever you do to heal yourself. Anyway. Those are a couple of things. So watch for the viral complexity. Do take a history of previous illnesses, particularly viruses in this COVID time, and see if there's a prehistory, which COVID could really amplify or activate whatever injury, trauma, pain, or damage was done from a previous viral load. Some of you are already working on me with things like that, so that's really good to do the prehistories and other traumas. Okay. You know, I just wanted to mention that because that's like the, I had somebody who was diagnosed with PLS, not ALS, primary, I think I talked about her in the past, but primary lateral sclerosis, which affects mouth, throat, and legs, but doesn't affect arms, peripheral areas. Speech was not very, a little bit affected, or throat and mouth were affected, but clarity, focus, mobility, everything else was fine. But her legs, she was, you know, kind of, poking along here, moving very slowly leg-wise. But the interesting part was the memory she accessed was the boyfriend putting his hands around her throat and threatening her, and the fact that she should have left the relationship sooner, which would be legs and throat. And that's the two areas where PLS showed up for her. But she was a client, when that went active, she had had the same history. She had a history of chickenpox, mononucleosis, Epstein-Barr, and shingles. She had had all of those in the past and had a already weakened immune system. So when the trauma occurred, her system really in those areas really, really went into crisis very quickly. So my question is, when the immune system's already been compromised by viral loads, are some of these diseases showing up site-specific due to some kind of a targeted trauma in that part of the body? So, and they call it PLS because it affects this part of the body. It was ALS, it affects more parts of the body. So I don't know how much of this is trauma-based. That becomes our question. We won't know until we try reframing it. So, you know, be open to working with things and open your mind to things that you could imagine being trauma-based, or ask about it. If it doesn't shift it and doesn't change, your ego can't afford to be invested in this. Of course, we'd all like for all of our clients to heal. That isn't going to always happen. Once the trauma has been left in the body, what I tell my clients is once trauma is left in the body long enough that damage has occurred, I can't always do anything to reverse what's already damaged. If the organ's been removed, if done surgery to try to correct this and did something to you, I can't undo what the surgeons and the permanent damage or changes that have been made. But sometimes we can prevent recurrence or escalation in the pathology by getting to the memory-based origins sooner or soon enough to maybe stop the progression. So that's a little bit about just the whole disease, seizure, kind of illness side of it that we're looking at. Hey, how's it going? So, yeah, good. Other questions? How are we doing?
Did you see the article today in the New York Times? I could email it if you want to send it to everybody, because it discusses this neurological issue now with COVID, and people that were getting it and going to the hospitals are actually having hallucinations. Did you see anything about that?
I heard about the hallucination phenomenon, but I haven't read anything about it.
And then there's post-issues, too, where they're still traumatized from even the experience or having major anxiety and other stuff going on, or they're not even all with it yet when they're out. So it'd be interesting to see if HMR could help with that, too. I'll send you the
article. Well, you know, we work with trauma, so they're going to if people already have slight tendencies towards anxiety and having COVID escalated, if COVID, the way memories occur holographically, it's going to build on whatever trigger predisposition is already in the body. So you're going to see it coming all over the place for all the things that people have previous traumas about, you know, hospitals. If they had a trauma in a hospital, then having to go to a hospital for COVID is now amplifying their prehistory. And then they're super anxious in hospitals because of that. So you're right. Anything that is a prehistory for anxiety, closed structures, a man in a mask, a needle, you know, whatever they're doing that has a prehistory is potentially an issue. The hallucination thing is interesting. I'm not sure what they're going to see as the organic basis of that or what that might be doing.
Some of them were pretty intense hallucinations. It goes into detail in the article. I can send it to you.
It'll be interesting to see what they figure out might be activating or causing that relating to COVID. But COVID adapts. The virus, the weakening of the immune system is so severe, it adapts to whatever your vulnerabilities already are. Like, I almost died of bronchitis in a child, and the coughing I was doing in January, February later was was the most profound cough I ever remember as a conscious person. I don't know what I did as a two-year-old, two-and-a-half-year-old. I don't remember. But it was very interesting. I do know that the one site that craves coolness all the time is my throat. And that was tonsillectomy when I was 3. And it seems like it never gets enough coolness to satisfy itself for the heat to go away or something. But the first thing I said when I came out of anesthesia was, how could you all do this to me? So I was confronting trauma at 2 and a half in my parents. I was like, how could you do this to me? So it was like, you know, anyway, I was confronting trauma at 2 and a half. Well, I spoke my piece. So anyway, why did you do this to me? Like, well, in the throat, you never know. Meyer, you had a question or something? You're kind of bopping around here.
No, I'm fine.
Okay.
I had a question. Yeah. Another quick question, really, is so, like, I played football, and you know, you and I did some sessions on those head injuries, is, you know, like head injury after head injury. I don't remember. And would you recommend, like, could you do a level 2 on, like, the whole host of them? Because I mean, I might have had 10 in one day, you know, not like major, but bangs on the head.
Possibly, you know, if you don't have distinctive memories of each one, they probably did blur together. They're no longer separate. I think over time, memories tend to blur. That gives us an advantage. Like, well, I don't know what moment in the practice or in the game I got injured, but there were several. So that would be an advantage in that time and space are no longer separated in your mind. And therefore, if they're treated collectively by the subconscious, they can be addressed collectively. So you could run, say, what colors do I move through my body to release all of my head impacts and traumas? Or maybe not full concussions, but all of my head trauma. What colors do I see? And whatever color sequence comes to you, run those colors through and see what that does.
Okay.
I don't think they're not able to be refreshed. Some memories, once you've been molested or abused, that's where I saw level 2, you know, in the late 90s, is like sometimes they were molested so often and they can't, in the same place or a couple of places, they can't separate one memory any longer from the others after a period of time. So the good news is they start blurring together into a single metaphor that can be contained and reframed. So we could take all the little girls. So one thing you could do is, like, I'm going to take all the Bills out of the scenes playing football before their heads get hit or concussed. How many Bills show up in your safe scene with you that would like to not have a concussion? And then see how many show up, because that will tell you how many, ever many parts of you see, how many moments or times you were actually injured or concussed. And then what colors do I run through all those Bills to let them know they're fine, they survived, and are brilliant, and their heads are working fine, and they're in 2020. You know, and whatever those colors are, run it through all of their heads and yours. You know, run it through the parts. Mm-hmm. So, like when I worked on the woman today with the child, I said, run your light purple through your daughter and yourself right now. You're connected. Run the yellow through yourself and your daughter right now. You're connected. And so, you know, COVID's actually giving us a huge long-distance gift, but developing our quantum talents under duress, but you know, it works. So but I'd take all the parts of me, see how many show up, how many head injuries did I actually have. You might be surprised how many show up in your safe place.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
That's an option.
Yeah. Okay.
Good. Other questions? Things going on?
Do you have any, can we talk about allergies? How can we address allergies?
Well, I think probably the easiest site is find out where maybe the primary manifestation of the allergy is in the body. See where it shows up. Like, so for a lot of people, their stomach allergies, dairy, gluten. If I do gluten, although I'll have you, here's something you might want to try on yourself. This will be interesting. So this is the first time I've seen this happen. Is I scanned myself last night holographically. Put myself in front of myself and scan me. I was like, oh, this is interesting. So I felt a little thing in my throat area. And then when I got to my stomach and gut, I saw a black, smoky energy And I heard two words. I was like, this is really weird. I heard micro and the word was fotida. Now, this gets even more interesting. So I looked up, I said, micro, it sounds like a fungus. So I looked up microfotida, nothing shows up. But I said, well, maybe they're two separate words, micro, and look like small spores or particles spinning around. Like, okay, but it's like in the stomach gut area. What is that? Then I looked up fotida. Fotida is a plant, I think, coming out of Africa. And the remedy of fotida is for smoke inhalation. I was like, oh my God, Tucson was burning. I was like, and then I went into articles about what is transported when there are wildfires and what is transported in the air to people in different communities. And they were talking about how when things in China were burning at some point, the smoke traveled to Texas and impacted people's breathing in Texas. So I'm like, what the heck? So they did a study, that, and nobody's published anything about this at this point that I know of. It probably will scare half the human population to death. But when wildfires and things like this occur, fungus, spores, things get into the air through the smoke and transported. They're transported long distances. And I didn't see any articles figuring out where, how would you gauge what the population took in. The whole mountains above Tucson, they burned, fell down on Glendo over on the northwest side. It came down on me when it came around the mountains, fell down on us. I had ash falling down my patio on the northeast side. So when wildfires and these things are occurring, there's a level of toxicity. And when I worked with a guy in Chicago, I've got his name right now, Darren Weiss, who does his own Infinite Love, and I forgot what he called it, Infinite Love and something. He does the technique, and he was working on me and doing a kinesiology. Before he muscle tested him, he says, are you allergic to jet fumes? And I had the thought 2 weeks earlier that why am I only having trouble breathing, coughing in my sleep states? And I found out they're launching the jets and testing a lot of these jet fighters at the Davis-Monthan Air Base here at nighttime. So it doesn't interfere with flights and people. Now, my condo is at the top of a hill range above the city, and I'm the first condo that the wind hits when it blows over the city and the shopping center. It blows straight into my elevated condo up here on top above the city. And so I get hit with all this wind coming off the city. And I'm like, this is air and wind stuff. So I'm quite curious to see. I've ordered it's a homeopathic remedy. Fotida is a homeopathic remedy for smoke inhalation. And so I've ordered it. I'm like, I don't know, but if I heard micro and fotida, I'm like, I'm going to order this thing and see if this black, weird, spore-like thing in my gut is tied to breathing and inhalation of something to do with smoke. So if you're in burning areas, or have clients that were in burning areas, I've worked on a bunch of people that were in Santa Barbara and Montecito. You know, Montecito just burned. And then it rained, and the floods and all the stuff went through the city. Somebody was saying something?
Well, right now we have been getting smoke from California, Colorado, and New Mexico. Maybe that's why my nose itches so much.
I'll share my homeopathic remedy with you. There you go. So we'll have to take a look at that, because there is a remedy for smoke inhalation. And I'm like, I think I was inhaling jet fumes at night. And I think the smoke stuff that came down from the fires some years ago and the recent one, it was just dropping ash and stuff in the air here for days. Mm-hmm. And so that'll be quite curious to see what happens with that.
We have it too up here in Washington. I couldn't go outside yesterday, though air quality was so bad, just from BC, Washington, I guess. Oregon is on fire now, I guess.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Mm-hmm. So Fotida, F-O-E-T-I-D-A, is a homeopathic remedy for smoke inhalation. So you may want to check that out, those of you that are. How are you, David? You're not burning up there. Your town's good, right? Everything is okay?
Yeah, we're fine up in Northeast Oregon. It's really the Willamette Valley that's on fire. And it's quite amazing, because it is going through actually cities and devastating large cities in Southern Oregon. So it's a mess. It's very, very interesting.
Difficult
but, up here in Northeast Oregon, we're getting all the smoke from everybody else. So I'd really appreciate your talking about the smoke inhalation and then the mm-hmm. possibility of things being carried in the smoke, because I'm sure I'm dealing with a lot of people that are having difficulty breathing right now. So I'll work with them from an HMR basis as well as take a look at that.
Yeah, take a look at the Fotiva thing, because I'm not sure if it came up just clear as a bell. I'm like, Fotiva, what kind of word is that? You know, so I wrote it down, looked it up, and then it said, oh, it's remedy for smoke inhalation. I'm like, oh, what in the world? How would you even guess that? But anyway, I heard it in my head, Fotiva. So maybe the clairaudience. I was told I was clairaudient as a child. Then it freaked me out, so I turned it off. So maybe the switch is back on again. So if you get more words, let me know. Some of you are more clairaudient than I. See what comes up about that. But Fotiva as smoke inhalation remedy.
We also get the Saharan dust every year. And I know so many people get sick when that comes through. I mean, all the stuff that's coming with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, plus the Sahara, the Hamsin. Oh, I'm sorry, Hamsin was in Israel. Sahara, yes, the Hamsin of the Sahara. If you get it in Israel, they call it the Sirocco. Okay, the hot winds that come off the African plain into Italy, they call it Sirocco. And in California, it's Santa Ana winds, I believe. Now, this is a bizarre little aside to keep you entertained. If you happen to kill your wife during the Hamsin, you lose your mind or murder your spouse, you're considered considerably less liable, and the penalty will be less, because the positive ions coming off the Hamsin, the Sirocco, and the Santa Ana winds make you crazy and make the brain go fuzzy and you do things you wouldn't normally do. So if you happen to kill your spouse during one of these hot positive ion storms, you will not be prosecuted as badly as you would otherwise be if you're in the least anyway. So I thought that was interesting. So they took into account the horrors of positive ions. Negative ions are very good for you. That's why we should all have kitty cats. I'm just kidding. But cats are the only animals with a negative ionic coat. So the Egyptians considered cats very sacred, very intuitive. And so cats, I know Jeanette's like, but I'm raising dogs, I'm a dog. Anyway, but cats have positive ionic coats, but that's why they feel so nice, because they calm you down and relax you. They're very good. So anyway, positive ions.
And salt lamps. Salt lamps.
Salt lamps, yeah, that's good. Oh, yeah. So, so we're talking ions, seizures, smoke inhalation. Any other interesting topics of the day today that you...
Yeah, I have one. Okay. There's a product out that's called Imulin that it gives a nutrients to the body so that the body processes sugars and carbohydrates effectively instead of turning them into fat, instead of going directly into the bloodstream. And, of course, if you've got... sugar's not processing well, it's going to, anything to do with inflammation, it can really increase that. So I was thinking about that when Glenda was talking about allergies. Mm-hmm. And I've just started trying some. And one of the things I find I do when I eat, I tend to want to keep eating, even though I don't gain much weight. But I just tend to keep eating, and then I want to eat sugar, and then when I eat sugar, I want to eat more sugar. And I found that I get full a lot quicker using this. And
Imulin?
Imulin.
I think I've seen that advertised somewhere recently. So. Mm. I don't think I have it, but I've investigated some products, so that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's by the company Valentis, I think it's called.
So that's different from inulin, I-N-U-L-I-N?
Yeah, that's different. It's an E, Imulin.
Imulin. Uh-huh. There you go. Hey, maybe it's from emu oil. You never know.
Well.
Antoinette turns me on to, what is it?
Blue emu
for... What's that for? For pain, arthritis?
For pain, yeah.
You can get it at, what?
You can get Walmart, you can get it at any drugstore, you can get it at Amazon.
Or you just go buy a blue
I was going to say, I second that. I use that a lot with my patients, so I absolutely agree.
Nice.
Yep.
Or you could just go buy a blue emu. I mean, come on. Yeah. I don't know. Not sure about that. Got to keep your sense of humor in this time of. So I'm doing a meditation thing for a charity. I'm doing two things. One this September that should come out on the website. I'll sort of send you the link where I'm doing. I might record it for myself and just send it to you all anyway. But it's kind of a 7+ chakra meditation, kind of reviewing where we're at, managing our chakras during the transition time, like frustration, irritation, anger, and survivability on the red level are kind of challenged, you know, finances, other kinds of survivor issues. The red, orange, creativity, affection, touch, you know, that's your orange chakra. That's compromised with the social distancing. So you're having a buildup of frustration with your normal affective channels and contact social channels. Then the solar plexus, which is the relationship channel, is being impacted by distancing. Then the heart, you know, and whatever traumas and issues and passions you have about that. Throat, self-expression, having your voice heard, being listened to. So these things are in a various state of stress given the circumstances. And we have a couple of more months, at least with this, you know, with in an election year, everybody is more highly stressed than usual. So they're going to be triggered. You're going to find people being triggered by all this. Throw in COVID and an election year and media's tendency to sensationalize everything. They're going to try to trigger you and push you over the edge with fear and anger and sadness. And some of that's an attempt to manipulate, you know, your decision making. So nicest thing to make a healthy decision wherever you're going with all that in the fall is to clear your traumas and take extra care of you. I was excited when I scanned my body. It's like, what's that? And I got the Fotita thing. So you never know. There's no reason you can't holographically scan yourself and see how you're doing. Place yourself in front of you and ask objectively for your guides to assist you and show you what's going on. And then ask what you might need to reframe and what's happening with that. I thought it was quite helpful, actually. So, okay. Any other questions? Actually, it's already 6:30. Look, we just buzzed by today. Any other questions, things coming up for everybody? Donate to Jeanette's pet animal parvovirus rescue efforts. You know, I think you sent out an email, right?
That was a personal one I sent out just to a few people. And okay. You were on my personal list.
Well, I will personally respond soon.
We were able to take care of that rescue. I got another one that we're working for too. We lost another dog, but that's okay.
Sad.
It happens in my world. You know, most of them get saved, but we're always going to lose a few of them, and I'd much rather them go than suffer. So.
You will also notice with severe trauma, there's a room for animal discussion.
Yes.
Because one of the things is people will, when I used to do ACOA groups, they and their collages at the beginning of the workshop, mm-hmm. They would always do collages and they'd always have a picture of their animals and they would rarely have a picture of their parents. Okay. So unconditional love comes from the kitties and the doggies and all the critters and not necessarily from the ACOA parents. Yes, you know, that we don't see that there. Like, no, maybe my mom, perhaps.
I'll tell y'all.
Dogs and animals will always be there. I had a client today that did that. She's like, yeah, no, my animals. But the cruelty of the abusive parent, one way you can gauge abuse mm-hmm. is what did the parents do to the animals of this child? Mm-hmm. You can ask about that. And oh my goodness, the things that you hear about that.
I will share with you an interesting thing that my doctor, I recently was had to call my doctor for some stuff. And we were just in a discussion and I was telling her that I experience anxiety higher than I've normally experienced in my life. And sometimes I almost feel like I'm gonna have an anxiety attack. And we're talking along and that kind of stuff. And I told her that about the stuff with the dogs and she goes, do you lose dogs? And I said, yes, we lose some. And she said, Jeanette, how many dogs since the first of the year have you lost? And I said, well, I mean, we've treated 250, but I said, we lost 32 dogs. And she looks at me and she goes, I haven't lost 32 patients. And I went, but you care for human beings. And she looked me right in the eye. It was a telecom. She looked me right in the eye and she goes, caring for a living life, whether it be animal or human, and losing that life in the middle involves grief. And you might consider that you need to do a little bit of grief work. And I looked at her and I went, you know, I've known you for a lot of years and I still am amazed at how you can hit the nail on the head. So, I mean, when you're talking with your clients, I can tell you that people suffer from trauma losing animals. I mean, you don't think, you know, you always think, oh, the horrible is when you lose a life, a human life, but you can suffer trauma from losing.
Well, I have clients that grieve way more of the loss of their animals than they do of any of their close relatives.
Yeah. Yep.
The close relatives couldn't hold a stick to the animal's love or, you know, kindness or gentleness and so on. A lot of people contain their horrors of their childhood through the animal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm convinced animals are strong empaths and they sometimes take on illness and pathology from our clients and get sick with it sometimes. And,
yeah.
Take that on. So yes, that is very possible.
I was doing Reiki for pets too.
Oh, were you?
My new thing, I was like, oh, I'm gonna do Reiki for animals and pets.
Heather, are you a hypnotherapist now? Are you certified in hypnotherapy?
Yeah, I've been certified for a while, so that's what I was doing. See, most of my clients is under that. And then I got
Cool. That's easier. So I actually view the test, depending on how you're practicing it, it's a little less rigorous if you're doing it like under hypnosis than if you're like there's hypnosis, clinical hypnosis, and there's, you know, licensure under boards like social work, you know. So it's a little different, a little easier to get certified when you're doing it under a more fluid certification rather than a licensure. So we'll get that done shortly. So
good. Thank you.
I do have one thing before we leave. This is technical. Mm-hmm. Next month, you're going to receive, make sure you pay attention to your email from Beverly. Zoom is going to require that we use passwords and waiting rooms. This is going to become a requirement that they're instituting at the end of this month. So you're going to get a new, when you look at your stuff, it's going to tell you some new steps. I'm going to recommend to everybody, I know those of you that have Zoom ID, sometimes you like to go in, put the meeting ID in, and then the password. Mm-hmm. You can do that if you want to. The easier path is going to be just to use the link that is sent out. And when you come in, you're going to be forced to stay in a waiting room. And then when Brent gets on, or when I get on, we'll open the waiting room up and everybody can come in. So if you get this, the host is waiting to bring you into the session. Don't think something crazy has happened. That's normal. And I'm going to have write it up for Beverly and we'll send it out, but just be aware it's going to look different next month. You might want to browse through your normal email you get from her.
Okay. Also, as of next month, we'll all be wearing masks because we don't want any computer viruses. No, I'm just kidding. It's okay. Enough with the mask thing. Glenda makes great masks. If you need a mask, talk to Glenda. Yes. Glenda's, you know, mask production.
Yes.
She's probably run out of stuff, you know. I actually bleached two of mine, Glenda. I think I might have to come back to you for a remediation or repair. My masks were traumatized. Anyway, I'm lecturing in masks now. If you can picture it, I get designer Glenda masks, though, so it's really quite nice. But it's a little weird. I have a bigger office now, so I don't know. Anyway, hope everybody's doing well. Any other questions or things that you have before we disperse for now? Okay, we're moving into the fall. Prepare yourselves. We have an election year. You're going to have to keep people calm, relaxed, moving colors through their bodies, right? Think of the highest good, optimal outcome for the planet, right? Then we'll see where all this where it goes and reframe for yourself. Try scanning yourself holographically. A good practice session. You might find it quite interesting.
Yeah.
You know, we're already dissociative enough. You should have no trouble putting yourself out there and scanning yourself. I'm just kidding, you know.
I had an interesting thing that happened to me. I had a nightmare last night.
Oh, goodness.
Carl woke me up. He says, are you all right? I says, no, I'm having a nightmare. And anyway, today I have so much so much more energy than I've had. And I don't know what the connection is, but I think that's the connection, but why, I haven't figured out yet.
Well, you probably killed off She Who Must Not Be Named in the nightmare and eliminated her.
The cord has been cut a long time ago with that one.
It's the relative trauma that we've been working on, folks. We named her after Voldemort because she was
Karen, I sent that to you. That's who we're talking about. That's She Who Shall Not Be Named.
Hi, guys.
Okay, thanks, y'all. Bye.
All right, thank you, Brent.
Take care. Karen, if you stay, right, and Brent, if you stay, I'll update you on some stuff.
Thank you.
Bye, okay. Erica.
All right, we're leaving.
Hi. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Ramona. Bye, Ramona. I did get your records, Ramona, so don't panic. I have your
Ramona just came on.
Ramona's mic is off. Ramona, turn on your mic.
May I speak to you for a minute, doctor?
Sure. Okay, y'all. I'll talk to Ramona for a second. Yes?
You're on, Mona. Ramona, you're on.
Oh, okay. So, I'm trying to book an appointment for you for certification.
Uh-huh.
So, how are we going to do that?
I am going to start going over the records this week. Some things people have mailed in some records. I'll start going over those. I'm going to set up a time to do that. If we need to, I know your work, so you're good. So we can do it on the phone if we need to, or Zoom, maybe do a Zoom.
Zoom, it's fine, like yeah.
That. Yeah, so we'll do that. We'll set that up, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, no, you don't have to fly out. If you want to fly out, you're welcome to. But I don't think Canada is letting anybody across the border yet, are they?
Nope.
Yep, so so you're stranded. You can't fly down to Arizona. Oh, poor you. Okay.
I wish. Believe me, I miss Tucson.
Yeah. Meyer, y'all are sequestered up there, I guess, huh?
Yeah. You can come into Canada, but you have to isolate for 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks, yeah. Yeah, they told me that. So I flew up to Illinois recently on Southwest, where you're a seat apart from everybody. And it was all fine. Then I drove back to Arizona with a friend of mine in his electric car. So that was kind of fun, and a Tesla. One pedal, by the way. So your accelerators, also your brake.
I don't know how it's for you, but working with a mask and a face shield is no fun.
Yeah, no, I'm having to do that at work, and it's really not pleasant. I'm used to it, kind of, but it irritates me sometimes. But there are different kinds. I'm trying different kinds of masks, too. There's some that are much lighter and less intrusive. There are some with, what do they call it? What's the kind of silver? The colloidal silver. They have a colloidal silver mask that they made that some are using that seems very non-intrusive. And is
very light. The problem is you have to see facial expressions.
Actually, I had two guys at my lecture from San Francisco, a couple, and they had a black mask that went around like that and had a clear plastic filler in the front. So you could see their happy little mouths moving and kind of hear them talking. Yep. So I wish Miramar would provide that for all of us so we could at least see happy little mouths or something.
Yep.
But you're going to have to do what they learned to do on, what was the name of the show? Design show, the modeling show, I forgot. I forgot her name. But she'd say you have to learn to smile with your eyes, okay?
Right.
So you have to learn to smile with your eyes.
Jeanette's mask is good.
Anyway, I don't know what's happening, but the businesses are going down rapidly.
Yeah.
My mom is 93, and she's in Transylvania, Romania. I cannot go there, so it's just crazy. Yeah. It's just crazy. I mean, when I hear how many people have died, I just don't dare to take the flight.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't go any long distances. I felt good about the Southwest. Plus, I think I already had it, so it's like,
cannot have it again.
Well, actually, it's not likely. The man who had it again had a different version of the virus. It wasn't the same virus.
Huh.
It was a different virus. So apparently nobody's gotten it, aside that I know, the second time that's the same original virus. It kicked your ass. So either your body reacts to it, builds up antibodies and kicks it back out, and you're okay after a time. But if it tries to get you again, I find it difficult to think. It would have to be a significantly different variant. And the vaccines they've tried, a couple of them respond to all of the one of the things they discovered responds to all the variants of the virus. So we'll see what happens with that. You never know.
Hopefully. I have four colleagues who quit.
Yeah, Miraval's looking kind of sparse still here. I had like
six, they quit,
seven clients because, this week, six clients last week there. But
because the hospital doesn't allow us to work from home. Oh. Although we are outpatient, an outpatient clinic, we have to drive there and talk on the phone from there. So.
Okay. Well, HMR should thrive. We should be able to go forward with this because the scanners are working fine and we're able to do long distance.
Yep.
Quantum mind is not really limited trauma-wise from what I've seen. So I can tell you that when we can go forward. Okay. So we'll talk.
Okay.
Talk soon.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye, Meyer. Bye.
Sorry.
Take care. It's okay.
Was all right.
Glad you could tag in for a little while. Good to see you. We talk about kitty cats today, so cats and animals.
Oh, he's somewhere around here.
Yeah, give him a hug for us. Okay. We'll talk
okay.
to you soon. Thanks, Ramona.
Bye. 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 Bye, Jenny.
You had something, Jeanette, you wanted to ask about?
Yeah. Well, I had something I want to tell y'all. First of all, I'm going to apologize to y'all that I haven't gotten any more work done on the statistics.
Well, just take a breath. You look like you've been run over by a truck. Nothing personal, but you kind of had a tough time.
Since now we only have the three of us, I'll tell y'all why I was in my doctor's office. I ended up with waking up in the middle of the night with my stomach. It would wake me up and it would hurt and I would have to get up and eat something. And I ended up off and on with diarrhea for about a month. Finally, I called my doctor and I talked to her and she goes, Jeanette, she said, what are you taking? Because I have that bulging disc in my back of my neck and I was having really bad headaches. She says, are you taking ibuprofen? And I said, yeah, I'm taking it a couple of days a week. She said, I think you have developed an ulcer between the stress you're under and that. And she asked me that question about the dog. She says, I think you've got grief anxiety. So the long and the short of it is she put me on some medicine to help me deal with the anxiety, which it's done a wonderful job, you know, of doing that. And I made a commitment to her. I said, I have a technique to work with my grief. I just didn't consider. I knew that it was happening. I knew that I was being told by everybody around me. It just is part of the nature of what we're doing. You just have to deal with it. And I kept going, okay, I am the person who everybody's looking to have the answer about what we do with the dogs. And I did the same typical thing of thinking, okay, just keep going. So it caught up with me. I also have to go get a colonoscopy, an upper GI, a sonogram of my stomach. I mean, the whole nine yards to determine why I couldn't eat or why I was waking up, not being able to sleep and all that kind of stuff. And also in this month, we have had another round of dogs that we had one of them break with distemper. So I had 14 dogs quarantined in different houses, people unhappy about it, you know, just the whole nine yards. So long and short. And then my son and my grandchildren, who I have not seen in a year, get to come down and I'm in the middle of all this. And so something had to give and you guys were what gave and I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. You think you've taken on a little too much perhaps, you know, I don't know.
Not deliberately, Brent. Not deliberately.
Your subconscious mind, you have to talk to subconscious Jeanette,
I know.
Who is hell bent on healing the planet and all its little animals and all its little critters and helping Brent and Karen, helping the whole planet.
Well, let's
put things into balance. We have to help Jeanette as much as we help.
Okay, now hang on. Okay. To my credit, because in this instance, I actually about a month and a half ago said, okay, this business model is not working. This was not my original plan was different than what we've ended up doing. Right. And what we've ended up doing does not work. And I started talking to my partners about, look, we can't call a halt in the middle of a parvo season. You just can't do that because it's like a rolling, it's just constant. It does slow down at the end of September. And I said, I am telling you that we are having a meeting, a retreat type meeting to have a discussion about this because we're not going to do this again. I will not do this another year. I will not carry this load on my shoulders. I will not carry the administration of this nonprofit and handle the medical aspect of the dogs. That's too much, you know, I don't have enough energy to do those two things.
Right.
The problem is that we got to get to that October 1st and to the October, and we just got hit. Even my vet told me, he said, my God, Jeanette, y'all have just been hit right and left with stuff. And he says, you just, you know, he tells me, he says, you know, shut it down for a day if you need to. Shut it down for a couple of days, whatever. He said, y'all just need to get to October where you can back up, take a look at your business model, and decide, can you raise the kind of money you need to raise to hire some medical people in? Because what we need to do, as much as I love to treat, and you know how I love to care medically for people, Brent, what I realize is that to make this work, I'm going to have to do the administrative side, which is the goal, get the volunteers, talk to people about donate money, all the things that are not my forte. But if I'm going to do that, I can't be carrying a lot of other stuff because it takes a lot of energy out of me to go out to
people.
You're going
to have to prioritize and make choices.
Yeah. So anyway, I do have it on my plate as I'm about to finish the solution for the 14 distemper dogs. And once I do that, we're beginning to slow down. And you guys are the first thing on my plate. So
okay.
I really want to go do that. I was fascinated. The couple of days I worked, Karen, it was like, oh, this is so cool. And I kept going, I'm going to go back to it. And then I'd go, okay, no, I got to go fill out this medical record and that. And I was going, oh.
Well, you know, Jeanette, there's something to be said about this. And that's that you're no good to us dead. Okay.
How profound.
So I want you to make sure that what you're doing keeps you alive so we can do the analysis. So please stay alive.
Thank you, Brent.
Take a vacation. If you did take 6 months off of HMR or whatever management,
we'll
find help or do something. But we don't want you to get hurt by your kind heart. If your kind heart kills you, we're really in a lurch at that point.
So I know that.
This would not be a happy moment. So do not die and take care of yourself. And whatever we can do to help you, let us know. We'll send some
money. I will.
So we'll do some things to help.
I did do I waited a little too long, but once I talked to my doctor, she said, Jeanette, you took Lexapro years ago. It was successful. It's an anti-anxiety. She said, you need to do that, and then you need to process. I said, I know how to process. That I have a tool to process with. Mm-hmm. I said, the problem is I can't get physically to the point where I have the energy to feel like doing it. But the other thing is I couldn't get still enough. I couldn't get, and it mm-hmm. was just, it was this vicious, and she explained it to me. It was very interesting. She said, you know, she said, you can get into what's called the physical anxiety loop where your body, your adrenaline keeps pumping and you can't. And she said, we need to get your body out of it. And then maybe mentally you can do the work. And she was right. I mean, when I first started taking it, I slept off and on for almost 36 hours. And it was amazing to me when I got through that phase and that adrenaline kind of stepped down a bit, mm-hmm. I was able to start working with each of these more traumatic things that have happened around dogs dying. Did we make the right decision? Because I mean, it's interesting because people, you guys know me well enough to know that I can be very able to function in a moment and set aside the, hey, did I do the right thing? The trauma part of it, the questioning mm-hmm. part, and then I've got to go back and deal with it. And what a lot of people who were working with me were like, just, you know, it's just the way it is. You just get over it. And I'm thinking, I don't ever want to become that person who just gets over it, who just accepts mm-hmm. that this is just going to happen. I understand that it can. I understand that there will always be dogs who simply cannot survive, but I never want to get jaded to assume that, well, that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. One of the things I've always prized myself on is the ability to empathize and to truly care about everything that I do. And if I don't feel that way, then I don't want to be doing it. It's not worth it to me.
Right.
To be but doing
as a high level empath, we have to care that we all have to do the same thing. You have to take extra care of yourself because right. you're taking in the grief at three times the rate of a normal person. You're feeling it more, you're perceiving it more.
Yeah.
So multiply the 32 times three in intensity.
Right.
And like, you've had a ridiculous amount of death since the beginning of the year. So
right.
you're going to have to calculate in your compassion for the empath factor
right.
and say, I need to take a little, you know, break and care of myself. And if this isn't working, I'm going to have to transfer some of this to somebody or an agency. Ask your guides and angels to help. I'll ask the guides and angels to help you with that project so that you can focus your energies on what you're best at. That's the thing. We all have to make choices. I mean,
yeah.
you know, government's crazy. Everything's screwed up. The society's screwed
up. Oh, well, that's the
other
thing.
Finances are screwed up. So the only person that you and I can take care of to be a resource to help others is we've got to pause and take some care of ourselves or we won't be here to do it. So
yeah, that's the other thing. Just if I just sat still and did nothing, I would still have an anxiety. I mean, the earth itself right now is yeah. is struggling.
Well, you know, do your tsunami of grief and
yep.
send it wherever it needs to go. That whole huge wave of sadness
yep.
and pain and horror that you've witnessed, I can't imagine. I had trouble watching. I was a movie the other night. They had to cut their finger to produce blood and I almost passed out. I'm like, oh my God, I can't watch that. So you're watching animals dying, bleeding, freaking out, and whatever else. And I'm like, okay, more power to you. I just, you know, the longer you do this kind of work, and it's possible that you become more empathic as you near this work, and you have to, like, I'm seeing clients every 2 hours now instead of hour and a half, and that reduces the number of clients. It also gives me a break in between if I need it, which sometimes is there and sometimes not, but it allows me to slow the whole pace down. So COVID is forced to slow down, and they're coming back more slowly than otherwise. So it's been 6, 7, 8, 9 months almost of things being it really started in March. It's like 6 months of things being mm-hmm. way quieter and slower, and I'm healthier. I'm stronger and healthier than I've been in years because everything slowed down and forced me to slow it. And I'm still working on stuff, but I'm using the time to recharge. So I think, you know, you're in a different situation, obviously,
yeah.
with the dogs and the cycles. You know, yours is not letting up and
not right now. It will
not forcing a shutdown, but yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
So just take care of you, whatever we can do. So take your time. There's no rush. A few weeks, a month, you know, we've been going at this for 15 years and we're slowly evolving. Poor Karen's chomping at the bit, trying to get things moving. And I'm like, well, you know, it's going to happen. I have a pretty good sense
okay.
of timing about things. So when something is supposed to happen, it happens.
Yeah.
And until then, we're like, okay, we're moving in that direction. That's a good idea. Karen's always throwing new ideas at me. Those are excellent. Others, I'm like, I don't think we can do that yet. But close, you know, so we're getting there.
Well, here, Brent,
Karen and I were talking about incorporating a couple of assessments. Do you have access to incorporate, like, these would not have to be in the main documentation. These would be like assessments we would add on to the software that could be sent to the client. They would fill out, send it back, something like that. Is that the kind of assessment, Karen, we're looking at, you know, or is it assessment that the therapist fills out?
So are these forms?
They're two different. There's a choice of whether the client sends it or the practitioner does. And Mary Gaddy, I talked with her after our emails today, and she's willing to go to the Psychiatric and Medical Doctor Association and find out which one is the most accepted right now, and let us know that.
Okay.
So I'm not sure the answer. Some like the one I did at the VA, you fill out online, and it actually does the calculation and tells you the result, and they say now take this to your therapist and give it to him, give it to them so they can see your level of PTSD.
Cool.
So is this something that we want to scan into the software?
Would that be a complication? Would that be easy to do?
Nope. Yeah, the other thing is that because we have that ability to scan documents up.
I think we just set a date, Karen, those of us using the software, we just start using it on all the clients that are really receptive and willing to do it. Okay. And we would have a couple hundred clients by the end of the year, probably, at the rate it's going. So.
Yeah.
Well, that's slowed up. My private practice is really slow right now. So.
If it's already online, Karen, it's very easy if it's online and can be emailed. Like you can email it to your therapist. Because if it's emailed to you, it's easy to upload it to the software.
Right.
If it's not online, if it's a physical document, there I have tools to create it.
Scan it and PDF it and store it.
Well, no, I have tools. There's a piece of software I've been working with inside of PPRC. It's called JotForm. And you can create forms out online that you have a Jot account and you can create those. And what happens is you create one of those forms, somebody fills it out, and then when they hit submit, it sends the form off. Now, what I need to find out is whether it keeps a record of it, because for HIPAA reasons, it can't keep a record. Right. But there would be ways that we could create it so that we could create a form somebody fills online. But my hunch is, in almost all situations, that form may already have an online version of it. Because much of our world is online right now. It may already have it. And if it does, then it becomes very easy, if Mary can get it for us, to be able to use it, have your client fill it out, email it to you, and then you upload into their record the copy of that form. And I can show y'all how to do that real easy. It's built into the software.
I thought so. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. So we could get that, and certainly for all research participants, we can add that in. So.
And Brent, I could never ever create what you saw the other day.
That's okay. I think it was my computer was having a meltdown. It's like when sometimes when I haven't turned it off and turned it fully back on, it hasn't rebooted everything, and so it just acted possessed. But the weird part was I had three computers that all did the same thing that day. That wouldn't. I had three that wouldn't access their keyboards, for instance.
That is weird.
They just stopped accessing the wireless keyboards. So I think something they're doing when they're updating, computers are updating, did something funky with the keyboard links. So I don't know what the hell to say about that. I couldn't get any of the three computers I had. I was in the office of the client in Miramont. I had two laptops with me, and neither of them would go on would pick up.
That's so weird, because I tried from every angle.
I know, and then I came back home, plugged it in, did my desktop, it was fine, did it here, it was fine. So I'm like, I don't know what to say about that. Yeah. It might have been they all updated overnight and when they were...
Well, let me tell you this about your printing, okay? And you need to keep this in your mind. There is a network component to when those printouts are created. There are some... the way that software is written... When I went and looked, they're actually going out and calling some libraries from a network resource, a Google resource, okay? Which means that program has to have the ability to access the network to complete the printout. And I didn't realize that until I went to inspect what was underneath the hood. And that's why I say, at some point, if you get the funds, we really do need to find us another software supporter. Okay.
All right.
You know, because
it wouldn't even acknowledge, it wouldn't even transfer anything to it. It wouldn't even acknowledge the potential to print. So that link to the Google network thing, you're right, got disrupted. But Google's been doing weird shit lately anyway with their updates stuff. There's been some weird Google things going on, and I'm like, this is Google.
The other thing that I was reading and that I'm aware of, this COVID has stressed the entire Wi-Fi, internet, all of that in the United States. We don't have a good structure. Our structure isn't really solid, and it's not robust enough to handle the fact that we all went online at one time. Right. And so every now and then there's just been huge drops in, you know, connectivity and things that are happening because we just, it's not, you know, they're fighting. This is like our electrical system. Sometimes they fight to keep our electricals running too.
Right.
So we may experience some just kind of craziness that, you know, that doesn't have an explanation, which is why sometimes if I really have an issue, I will call Antoinette or I've called Karen before and said, can you go do this? Because I want to look in three different places in the country to figure out whether or not it's the software or whether it could be the network connectivity or something going on in that area, you know? So anyway,
okay.
That's what I wanted to tell y'all. I really do want to get back to it.
Well, I want you to put you first at some, whatever point you're ready to do that. And know that I can do some stuff with Excel more than I thought I could do. So if there's any data dump you can do, don't you do the analysis, just dump the data and I'll work on it manually or with Excel.
I've got one piece to do, which really wouldn't take me that long if I just put my mind to it. And I may do that. I may do this where I take the body map and make some things go, the designations go together, and then give you the raw data and say, okay, now what you want to do is go in and rename this part to be this so that we get consistency where we can actually start compiling and this data into something that makes sense. Because right now we've got so many variables. When you look at it, sometimes you go, I'm not sure I understand what that interpretation is. But if you use a little bit of smarts, then you realize if I combine these together, this makes a whole lot more sense to me.
Let me do the combination. You do the data dump.
Okay.
And Brent has also said he thinks we're going to get some cool stuff with colors too when we get into.
Now that I know we are. That I took a look one day just to go look and I went, well, this is interesting, you know, because I'd love to know based on the T-1 or the encoding message, what the color resolution for, and we can only do these with level one memories because they're the single memories. At level two, that we're gonna, that's a whole nother different kind of data analysis. I hadn't even figured out quite yet how to analyze that data. You're the one, Brent, that may have to kind of look at it and go, okay, well, let's go look for this. And then I'll see if I can pull the statistics. Level one's pretty straightforward because you've got a memory, you've got a, you know, and we can do some stuff. Level two is interesting.
Patterns are collective, so.
Yeah, so. All right, guys.
And we're using color better, you know, more than other people are. So I think when we get that color data, it's going to blow them away. And I love how you're doing this. We'll just
Sorry. That is the other thing. I moved back to the master closet again. And I said, I am not going to sit in the clothes. So I came to the bathroom, but the counter is like, I can do this. And I look like I'm looking over the edge.
You're like one of those little figures.
Exactly. Well, for a long time I had Mandy sitting here chewing on a bone and I kept thinking she pops her head up and I kept thinking, I'm waiting for someone to go, what is that little black thing that's popping? So anyway, all right.
We'll let you get out of the bathroom. Okay, I appreciate it.
I need to get out of the bathroom. I got out of the closet.
No, you're out of the closet. I appreciate that. You need to all get out of the closet.
Love y'all.
Love y'all too.
Later. Bye.
Okay. You're good, Karen. Anything?